Hello everybody, James here, and it's Ask Dutch Anything, and the Dancing Hat over in Tampa, Florida of University of Dutch is with us as well. And before we do an hour's worth of your fan questions of Ask Dutch Anything, questions for Dutch at gmail.com, let's do the very quick version of the plugs. We've got pro wrestling tees, new t-shirt designs on there that you can buy. We have Dutch's diplomas that you can buy. We have Dutch's books that you can buy, all signed from Dirty Dutch Mantel with two L's at gmail.com. And there are a couple of hats with University of Dutch on them that Dutch will sign for you as well if you make contact with them at Dirty Dutch Mantel with gmail.com. And also, there is talk of original or brand new designs of trading cards that Dutch is considering signing and making a line of as well. So if you're interested in that kind of affair, email dirtydutchmantel with two L's at gmail.com, and who knows, you might get yourself a signed trading card, vintage or brand new as well. It's entirely up to you, I guess, as well. Anything else? I've got two books as well, one on Owen Hart, one on The Rock. I've still not moved, apparently, fully. The internet's not right in the other house that I'm moving to, so I'm stuck here in this barren insanity. It's almost like a room where, you know, you put like the insane types, the padded room.
You look homeless.
Thank you.
Are you hungry?
No, I've got too many homes at the moment.
No, but are you hungry right now? You look like a homeless, hungry guy.
No.
Doing a podcast in a barren room.
No, I had a bag of smoky bacon crisps.
With some Owen Hart picture on the wall and a guitar.
Yeah, and an electrical outlet.
Can you play that guitar?
Yes.
You can?
Not very well, but I can. Well, you can play guitar. You can play guitar better than me. And when was the last time you picked up a guitar?
Several months ago.
Have you got one
but
again?
Yes. Do I what? Do I have one?
Yeah, do you have one? Because you got rid of the old one.
I had one that a guy wanted to buy because it's an old Jeff Jarrett guitar that was signed by Jeff. And I signed it too. And I just, see, I'm not a collector. And I had a couple of guitars anyway. And that to me was more of a collector item than what I would have. So I put it up for sale. Guess what I sold it for?
I don't know.
$2,700. No, that's a lie. I didn't sell it for that.
Okay. Was it $27?
No, I did sell it for $500. So $2,700, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? So, but sometimes, you know, one time I was going to sell something and the guy said, I said, well, that's too low. I said, make me an offer. He made me an offer that was more than I was going to ask him for. I said, okay, I'll do it for you. I wouldn't do it for anybody else. So, but yeah, I do play guitar. And I taught myself to play guitar. Not very, well, it's decent, I guess. I could do rhythm and I could do lead on a few songs, but that was about it. But I did teach my nephew to play, and he went on not to read music, just to, and I think that's the best way to learn is kind of teach yourself.
He went on to become a trumpet player.
No, he did go on to be a music teacher. So he went on to college, took music, and now he runs I think he has a music shop, and he runs a musical. If you want to learn anything, he can teach you there.
He needs to do some like Zoom lessons for me then, because I never got any better. I can do a bit of rhythm. That's my lot. A bit of rhythm, of crooning along with it.
Okay. Let me tell you about this. May 10th, May 11th, Evansville, Indiana. Mark it down. Dirty Dutch is going to attend for the first time in like 2 or 3 years. My first signing might be my last signing. I don't know. You never know. And it's the Legends of Memphis signing. And Jerry Lawler will be there. Bill Dundee. Austin Idol is there. Hey, Dutch. He'll be there. Tommy Rich. And Handsome Jimmy. Hey, Daddy. We'll all be there. And we're at the National Guard Army because the Evansville Coliseum is undergoing repairs. We'll be there 2 days a Friday and a Saturday. Come and join us. It's come see us while we're still here. Or it could be called the Legends of Memphis Social Security Tour. It could be that. But hey, I'm gonna see these guys. First time I've seen them in years. Handsome Jimmy has probably been at least 10 years since I've seen him. Idle more. Tommy Rich, probably five years. And Dundee, maybe 7 or 8. Lawler, probably 5 years anyway. So it'll be a get together for us too. And I think it'll be a fun day. It really will.
I think apart from maybe Lawler, you'll have the longest line for sure. Because I think this podcast, because we plugged it a lot on this show as well. But I think, or I hope as well, definitely that, there's going to be a ton of listeners that go there and see you and, you know, say, I listen to the podcast every week. Because how many subscribers do we have? Like 113, 114,000
100. Well, we're working with 113 right now. And we're working, of course, we're continually working to get more listeners and subscribers. I think we're closing in on 114. And I'm thinking the other day, 113,000 subscribers. I'm thinking, where in the hell do they come from? But you know what I find? We have a lot of subscribers in other countries too. Where do you find the biggest country that we have fans?
Oh, it's the United States about 70%, and then the UK about 10, and then Canada about 8 or something like that. And then the rest of the world is the rest of the world. But
I got one from Africa.
Hmm.
Said the new Thunderboat. If you could just feel. Okay.
Don't you move. If you move. Right, okay, we're going to do the questions now. Right, questions for dutch@gmail.com. That's how everybody's got in touch with us to send questions in for the Dirty Dutchman, the Crafty Veteran. And this is what Max Mueller has done. Please have Dutch, he says, react to the following clip. So we're going to do just that right now.
Okay, well, we see a guy with a military press. Now, who these guys are, or who the referee is, where it is, I have no idea. But just looking at it, I'm surmising, you like that word, that they broke some glass or a fluorescent light in the ring. This must be a hardcore match where anything goes, and the ceiling is about to fall in on top of them. Yeah. And the guy has a military press on his opponent, and the referee he's just there.
Biased.
with a lighter, and he reaches up and he sets the guy's opponent on fire, and he throws him out, apparently to throw him onto something. Let's see what he meets out here. Oh, the old concrete floor, the thing that doesn't give, doesn't collapse. And he's laying there on fire. And I'm sure this is a National Guard armory somewhere. Chairs all out of the way. He's on fire. And what do the guys do? Do they run over there and try to help him?
Yeah, well, let's see.
Oh, yeah. And the guys just hold his head like, oh, no. Well, you better get in there and put him out.
You know, right, I'm going to pause this here, right? And just at the middle left, there's a guy lying down on the ring with a sort of white mask on. Can you see him?
I can see him. He's just laying down that stretch.
He's just
like
reclining.
He's sunbathing. Was he in the match?
Kate Winslet in Titanic.
Yeah, and there's another fluorescent light bulb laying on to the right of the guy. Anyway.
One more time.
But the referee sets him on fire, throws him out. He hits the hard floor. Oh, my God. I guess he's moving. And the guy holds his head, runs over there. Oh, let's put him out. And to me, I think if you did that in a building, I think it'd be the last time you were in that building. Because if you didn't tell them and you didn't set up for this, if you ran a school and you set a fire, they may arrest you. So I want to tell any of the wannabe independent promoters out there, if you're going to do something like that or like this, you need to tell the building what's going on, because they may have certain fire regulations, especially in a school or a National Guard armory that are both government owned. So they may not want you doing it. And, you know, if you did it, and they didn't know about it, they could get fired too. You'd probably never run that building, or you could get charged with starting a fire, but those guys could get fired, and they might not want to lose their job over some stupid little wrestling stunt. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do anything like this, and this is just to the independent promoters I'm talking to out there, boy, this camera is moving, isn't it? It's all sharp. Over the place. It's all over the place.
Moving quicker than Ric Flair.
It's like it's on crack. It is moving faster than Ric Flair. That's faster than Ric Flair here. Whoa, there we go. But hey, let people in on your plans, because now nobody is taken by surprise. Now, just imagine after this, somebody says, what are they doing out there? They could have set this place on fire. You know how people are. They stooge out everything you do. So I'm assuming that if you're the commander of the National Guard Armory, or you're the superintendent of or the principal of a school, let him in on the plan, because it may backfire in both your faces. That's called Dutch's tips of the day.
Who is the most brain dead in this scenario? The promoter, the guy throwing the guy, or the guy being thrown while set on fire? Because it's a tough call here.
I think the guy getting thrown on fire, he's got two things working against him. And he's stupid, because not only are they throwing him on a concrete floor, he's supposed to hit the table, he missed that one. Not only are they throwing him, he's on fire at the same time, and he agreed to it. Now, so who is stupid? The guy throwing is just, hey, that makes him look good.
Well, what if he kills him? Well, that's manslaughter charge. It doesn't matter if it's a pro wrestling match.
That would be a manslaughter charge. And how do you know he agreed to do that? And the referee would be involved in it too. And Mr. Mask, laying on the ringside watching it, he had to be in on it. So we got quite a case here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if that guy had died, you know, that guy, that had to hurt that guy. You don't take a throw from a ring. He had to travel 15 feet and then hit. You couldn't have done me that way. First of all, I wouldn't agree to it. Second of all, I'd have been wrestling with a fire extinguisher. And it's hard to not do arm drags and have a fire extinguisher too, just in case I get set on fire.
Asbestos poncho, just in case.
And they did. Another thing is, they didn't have any fire extinguishers available, apparently.
No.
They were trying to put him out with their hands.
Yeah, that video goes for 11 seconds. He's on fire for at least 8 of them. And by the end of that 11-second video, he's still on fire.
Yeah, he had to have a burn. He had to have a burn. Where is that from? Why are you accepting videos like this without any backstory?
I mean, it sort of explains itself in a sense.
Yeah, but we need to know where it is.
So you don't accidentally go there.
Well, I don't care where I go. Nobody's setting me on fire. You know, I've never been set on fire. You know that, right?
I'd assume that, yeah.
Lawler has thrown it at me.
Hmm?
But I dodged it. Yep.
There's a lot on you that could have gone up in flames.
One time, somehow, is a match between Iron Sheik and Lawler. And he was going to... And the Sheik was going to end up trying to throw the fire on Lawler. And he had it's flash paper, you know, you can buy it in a magic shop. And he's trying to light. Somebody has Lawler holding him. Hell, I might have been even holding. And the Sheik said, Jesus Christ, the Jerry, the fucking thing wants the light. And the lighter wouldn't work. And finally, he just wadded it up and threw it in Lawler's face. The damnedest thing you ever saw. And Lord went down. Oh my God, he's blinding me with flash paper. You can't make this stuff up. And he never did get it lit. So, but it was the picture of the sheik. Jimmy Hart was out there too, of the sheik trying to light the paper. Click, nothing. Click, nothing. Click. Jesus Christ, to Jerry, the fucking light. The fucking light didn't want to work. I still laugh about that, but that's a classic story. I've never told that before, by the way.
No, I love that story. I've never heard that before as well. Next one. Darren says, hi, James and Dutch. My question is about title reigns. In the 90s and before, wrestlers only had a few title reigns, like less than 10. But in the 2000s and after, John Cena and Randy Orton, for example, have had 16 and 14 respectively. Was the title just hot-shotted to pop a rating? Thanks.
Monkey see, monkey do. It's what I'm saying. You're saying that all the little independents started using title reigns and are just WWE.
I think it's WWE. They went from, you know, your Brunos and your Pedro Morales and stuff like that to having a title change every couple of weeks at one point, it seemed.
Well, back in the... Here I go, sounding like a real old timer now. Back in the day, well, you would have a lot of title changes in the territorial days because you had to shake it up because you didn't have the talent to go. Hell, you didn't have the talent to go 60 days because you'd run through everybody, really. And what is Roman Reigns up to? 1,200 now?
Yeah, 3 years or something like that, yeah.
Well, that's yeah. And that'd be three going on four almost.
But in the territories, in the territories, you would have your local territory top title, but then there'd be the NWA or AWA world title as well, so which would be longer reigns.
They did that in Memphis too in a few places. I don't think they did it in Continental, I think. They just had one title, which I think was better. But the other title was actually meant to send, say you ran two shows on one night. To have a title match on each one of them, you would just split them up. So if you had a spot show you wanted to run, or say you were running Memphis one night, but you had another show you were running, well, you'd put the Universal title in Memphis, and then you'd put whatever other title they have in the other show. So you'd have two title matches in each show. So it made the show look bigger. Probably didn't draw any bigger because probably the secondary title didn't have a lot of steam on it. It was always the one that Lawler was after. That was the primary title. So if Lawler didn't want it, nobody else wanted it. Because if you got it, guess what that would mean? You'd be in the shit shows. You'd make more money in Memphis in the third match or fourth match than you would in some main event match with only 150 people there. So I've seen, and they wanted to give me a title one time in Memphis. I said, oh, no, I don't need it. Just give me my whip, and I'll just make do with that. Well, yeah, but you'd be the champion. I said, I forgot what I said, and I was begging them, please, unless you're talking to about the one Lawler has, I don't want the secondary one. Please don't give it to me.
Next one, Salvatore M. Because of a former line of work, I had the opportunity to meet several of my wrestling heroes from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It was awesome to talk to them about things that wasn't pro wrestling, topics such as politics, sports, women, and just general life stuff. There was a glaring commonality in all these discussions. The phrase, it's all a work, brother. That being said, is everything in life a work, brother?
Well, first of all, we're not brothers. Brother.
Brother.
But yeah, everything in life is a work. If you think about it, somebody does something. What do they do that for? Well, they're working you. Everything is a work. Tell me something that's not. Probably doctors aren't, because they're going to tell you something that's very, very serious, but mostly everything else is. Politics, the biggest work in the world. It's all promotion. He says this, well, he's a liar, he's this, he's, and you deal on feelings in politics. Of course, maybe a few facts. And of course, the media doesn't deal in any facts. They just deal in the ones they want to produce. You know, if they give a fact and then all of a sudden they don't give the counterpoint to it. And it's just what they believe. So they want people believing one way. Everything is, it really is a work. It really is. If you really think about it, and I can't come up with any great examples right now.
Magnets.
But what, magnets?
Yes. Are magnets a work?
Magnets a work? It is. Tell me how it is a work.
No, I'm asking if you think compasses and magnetic fields are a work.
Possibly in the greater scheme of things, it could be. Really, if you thought long and hard about it, why was it meant to work that way? Because if you think about nature, everything kind of works in nature. Even dying, you're dying for a reason, to make room for somebody else or make this. And why do animals eat other animals? And that's what I'm saying. Yeah, well, and they say, well, people, they kill little animals to eat and they're harmless. Well, yeah, but they're meat eaters too, most of them, except for the squirrels, and they eat nuts and something like that. But the bears and the lions and the tigers, they're all meat eaters. Elephants aren't, though, are they?
No.
So, but there's a reason why that works. And I don't know the reason for it, but nature is like that. If you think about nature in its totality, we breathe oxygen, but oxygen is not the major component of just air, right?
Nitrogen is.
Nitrogen.
Is nitrogen a work?
In the greater scheme of things, it probably serves a purpose, but it is. They use it for other stuff too, right? So it probably is. I don't know. And then I think about how in the hell did people years ago even figure this out? How did they figure out oxygen? How did they figure out nitrogen or hydrogen? How did they figure out the atomic bomb? How did they figure that out? And another thing I've thought about, because I have weird thoughts sometimes, language. How did they figure out language? Of course, in different languages. How did they come up with the words of verbs or adverbs or adjectives or subjects? If you think about it, and that was years and years and years ago with the really hard languages. How did they do that? You ever think about that? No, you don't think about stuff like that.
I think about that. I like etymology. I like the, which you like that word.
I did like that word.
Yeah, I like.
What's it mean? The meaning of things?
Yeah, no,
the
history,
naming of things?
The history of a word. So okay. The provenance. There's another word you can have.
Oh, that's a great word. So what were we talking about? Brother, please, you need to check yourself before you come on the show. Okay, what was the question here? Was everything a work?
Yes, but I believe your answer is basically yes, it is.
Well, I'm a wrestler, and I've heard it 1,000 times. And what's the better question is, what's not a work? Okay, death.
Taxes.
Is death a work?
Taxes.
You die for a reason, right? So it has a place in nature. I may not be describing it. Birth. Because, you know, this How many people in the world right now?
7 point something billion. Can you?
No, more. Almost 9 billion.
Can you start singing The Circle of Life from The Lion King?
No, I cannot.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see The Lion King.
What? I saw that on my birthday. My 8th birthday, I think. I saw that.
Oh, I did see it, but I can't come up with The Circle of Life. But I know what you're talking about.
I can't play the song. It's
yeah, okay.
I didn't
expect you to. So you mean you couldn't play the song here?
I could, but it'd get demonetized on YouTube.
Well, how would they know you played it?
There's content ID. There's automatic stuff that
they're spying. They're spying.
Essentially, YouTube is a work. That is a work. I'll give you that. Right, we're going to move on. Harry, can you give us a lowdown on what J.J. Dillon was like as a WWF Vice President of Talent Relations and how he compared to Jim Ross later in your original WWF run?
How was, who did you say?
Mr. Dillon, James J.
Mr. Dillon. How was he as a what?
As a talent relations executive when you were working for the WWF in the mid-90s.
I don't remember having many interactions with him, really. He would come in and sit down, and I'd say, hey, JJ, and he'd say, hey, Dutch, how you doing? And that was about it. I had very few interactions with JJ, really. And even Jim Ross, didn't Jim Ross have that title too?
Yeah, he took over in 96 while you were still there, I believe.
Yeah, I had very... very few interactions with him. So he asked me one time a question and I went, well, why am I off on such and such a day? And he got all combozzled. It seemed like he said, well, we can't book everybody. And I started to say, I didn't say, well, why did you book so many people? If you can't book them, why did you bring them in? See, WWF wanted everybody to live up there when it started. You've heard that, right?
Yeah.
And finally, the guy said, I'm not leaving here. I'm not leaving. I'm not transplanting everything up there to live in an apartment and have double rents or double house note. I'm not doing it. But Vince wanted everybody there around the office, close by, to where if they wanted you to run over to the office, cut a promo or do this, that you would be close by. And I think what knocked that down is the top names wouldn't do it.
So I thought that was just for office personnel then, but no, Vince wanted all the wrestlers to move there as well.
At one time, and it didn't happen. Now, office personnel, they have to live there, because they have to live close to the office. But I think now, and nowadays, they can do Zoom or they can do, you know, just internet. They could have a separate internet hookup to where if they all got to be at a meeting, they could just do it all off internet now. But that's now, not back 20 or 30 years ago. So you ever seen Titan Towers inside?
No, I've never been that far north.
The old ones? Well, it's a pretty big building, even the old one. It was about 6 floors. Might have been a little more. Might have been less, but it's a pretty big building. And inside, they have a huge, huge studio. And I think Vince has a certain floor that nobody's really allowed to go on unless you have the code or something, or somebody takes you there. But now the new one, I think it is 7 stories. And I think it's got all the accoutrements. You like that word? Accoutrements of the old one, but more. So it's a nice building. It really is. And it's being in Stanford. I bet that building is worth $10 million at least. Or maybe more.
Oh, I'd imagine a ton more. Who was Talent Relations VP during the Zeb Coulter run?
You know, it would seem like that I would know the hierarchy. I guess it was Mark Carano, maybe. But I never had any dealings with him either.
Just really. Because you never really complained about anything. I mean, are they there to be complained to? Is that what their job is?
Yeah, I didn't have any complaints. I went somewhere. I had to go to, this is what I did one time. I had to go somewhere and do this video. And I told him, I said, listen, I can't fly coach. Why? I said, I'm hurt. I can't do it. Okay. So I said, first class the rest of the way. The people go by. They look at me sitting in first class. How in the hell did you get up here? I says, I don't know. The luck of the draw, I said. The luck of the Irish or something.
Look at the Dutch. Passed,
yeah. Just passed me up. So sometimes to get something, you got to act like you deserve something. And I would think after 40-something years in the business, yeah, I did deserve first class, really. And they got all these deals anyway, so, and it's tax deductible. So why can't I have a little comfort on the way up there? I'm doing the same job as everybody else. And even, I was going to Europe one time. That's when it started. I said, I can't go, coach. So they stuck me in first class. And Swagger would get on. He said, what are you doing up here? I said, get in the back, jobber, job boy, get in the back. And I'd fly first class. Not a bad deal if you get it.
No.
And see, as far as Carano, wasn't Carano fired because he packed up somebody's clothing?
Mickey James.
And yeah. But that's the way they send you stuff back to you. They don't pack it up. I mean, neat and all that. They say, here, that's yours, and send it back to them. And it wouldn't be Mark Carano's place to do it anyway. He's the head of the department. Somebody else should have packed it up. And I think Mickey kind of took that as maybe a sign of disrespect, because it must have been really jammed in there. And she said to somebody about it, and then somebody took the ball and ran with it like a wrestling fan complaining about matches or complaining about, what's that girl's name we talked about? That was Maximum Male Model, no, Maxine Dupree.
Maxine Dupree, yeah.
Complaining about that. Then they decided to do something about it. Ended up firing Mark Carano. But I don't think they ever put him in charge of anything else. And later on, it was Mr. John Laurinaitis. And we saw what little bag of tutti frutti he opened up.
If you ever speak to Teddy Long anytime soon, ask him for some stories about Mark Carano.
what does he say about him? Tell me. Him.
I think it's Mark Carano and John Laurinaitis. I think he just hates them both. But he's always got some amusing things to say about them. Next question. Glenn Slater says, hi, Dutch. I came across an interview with David Schultz, and he had a comment about you. Schultz said you were a good worker and had ring psychology, but called you a yes man for the promotion. I'm curious on what your take is on these comments by Dr. D. So we're not going to show the footage itself, but what did Dave say?
What did he say? He said I was a yes man. I don't see anything wrong with that. Because how many times have you heard me say, stay in your own lane? I've said it 1,000 times. So if something doesn't concern me, I just agree and go on. And a lot of times, if it does concern me, I just say, okay, and go on. Because when you start disagreeing, unless you really have a hell of a point, when you start disagreeing, now you become adversarial. You like that word? That's a good one. We're using some good words today, buddy. You become an opponent because I shouldn't do this and I shouldn't do that. And blah, why would we do this? Well, nobody, they don't know. They're just delivering a message. So just go along with it. So, but David, I guess, he is not a yes man. I'll say that. He'll argue and what the hell and go on. And he's been, I guess, fairly successful with the wrestling business. And he got in a business that he actually sued him when he got into that bail bondsman business. And he was good at that job because David's not afraid of anything. He'll run in, which is a very, very, what he's got now, and I respect him, because the job he has now, that bail bondsman deal, he's going to run in on some people. He don't know what problems they have. I don't know if he's still doing it. Maybe a little too old to do it now. But when you go in, you better be ready to fight. You better have a gun, everything else. To me, I never had cojones like that. You know, if I was going after somebody like that, I says, you know, Mr. Smith, you know, they put this warrant out on you, and I think it would be better if you went with us down to the sheriff's office and had him arrest you. And, well, you know, that's not going to go over good. But David expected that, and he went after him. Yeah, I don't think that's a bad explanation of me. Yeah, I'll just go along with it, and you go along to get along. That's the old saying. So I just went along with their stuff until they went to the point that I didn't like it anymore. So I would leave. No big deal.
It's the most negative spin on putting easy to deal with on, basically.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Although, in fairness, you got off light because I think Schultz buried every other single person mentioned. Bill Dundee, Jerry Lawler. So you were the most praised.
Well, he hated. Oh, David, I like David. I'd be riding down the road with him. He'd pull out, I swear to God, the biggest gun I think I've ever seen. How you like? And he'd not one gun, but in his van that we drove around in, he'd have about three guns in it. I said, damn, what do you expect in a war? You never know. You never know. We'd be riding down the road, and he'd pull one of those guns out, and there'd be a sign, bang, bang. He'd just shoot his gun. So now you might know why.
Why you're easy to get along with.
Why I was easy to go along with, because I didn't want to have any heat with them. So I would just say, well, whatever you want to do, brother, whatever you want to do. And I've told the story about him pulling the guy back in the dressing room, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. And he was just, and I told the guy about him hitting the guy in the head in Louisville, right?
Yeah, with the belts.
Blood. Yeah. Blood went everywhere. David didn't back down from him. And of course, everybody knows he got sued for the thing with Vince McMahon with, what's the guy's name?
Stossel. John Stossel.
Yeah, and he slapped him so hard. You know, a guy told me one time, he said, don't ever punch anybody, especially if you're a big guy. He said, open hand slap them right on that ear. He said, if you hit them with a fist, you got to get them just right to knock them out. Here stuns them for about 10 seconds. And he said, Then you can be all over them, because you get hit here, your eyes close, your brain starts. It's a motion that your brain doesn't detect right off. And he says, that's what you do. If you want to get the upper hand, slap them, but slap them hard. Have you seen the new thing they got on Dana White has it?
The slap me. Oh, that power slap stuff. Oh, it's awful.
Well, that's what can knock them out.
Yeah.
If somebody said, throw a punch and hit me, nobody would do that. But the slap, they're not thinking about the slap. But some of them just stiffen up and go down. That's what happens when you know who told me this? Don Harris, one of the Blue Brothers. He said that's what, he used to be a bouncer in clubs, and his brother too. He said, if you ever got a touch somebody, he said, slap them. And he says, then you got them. Because they're expecting a punch or something else. But he said, if you slap them, he said, you're going to stun them for at least 5, 6 to 10 seconds. And they're just, they're wondering, you knock them on the dream street, they call it. And by that time, you can have them, you can do anything with them, you knock them, then you can knock them down, handcuff them, or do whatever you want to do. Some of them, but, and it helps if you're a bigger guy, and Donnie was about 6'8". He didn't weigh over 300, but he weighed 270. So you have a guy 6'7", 270, open hand slap you coming way back here and hitting you. Yeah, it would rock your world. So I learned that from him.
You
So I slapped this woman down at the supermarket. She was about 80. She's about 80. And I said, don't you ever talk to me in that tone of voice again.
You said Schultz hated, and then you trail off there. But I mentioned Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler.
He hated Lawler. He hated Lawler because he's from Jackson, Tennessee. You know, I talk about professional jealousy. He hated Lawler. He didn't really hate him. But business-wise, he kind of hated Lawler because he used to say he had some great sayings about him. He didn't like Dundee because Dundee would go around and do silly stuff in the ring, and David didn't like to do it. But it was according to what Lawler was doing with him at the time. If Lawler was pushing him, he liked him. And if he wasn't pushing him, that's something. But David, you know, I'll say one thing about him. He wasn't boring, and he was fun. He was fun to travel with. If he wasn't slapping somebody.
Or shooting anybody, of course. Next one, name unknown. Sent us in a long email regarding rumors surrounding Tom Zenk's dismissal from the WWF in 1987. Rather salacious, that involves Pat Patterson or Vince McMahon, Halcyon, and then Tom leaving WWF in short order, which seems a bit fanciful to me. One of the sources was Billy Jack Haynes. So if we leave that there in that sense. Having said that, did you ever have any interaction with Tom Zenk in WCW? And did he ever talk about him leaving the WWF when he seemed to be riding pretty high just a couple of years earlier?
My recollection of Tom Zenk, I maybe worked with him once, maybe. Tom Zenk and myself, he was like higher mid-card. I was like lower mid-card. And so we kind of had, I only remember one match with him. And he's not the type to sit down and idly chit-chat back and forth. And he seemed kind of pissed off anyway. So whatever he said, whatever, man, whatever. Like David said, yes, he said, what if I hip toss you? Yeah, fine, do it. Slam okay? Yeah, do it. And then I said, I'll stop you. Okay, what? I'll get you an eye. Okay, do it. Well, if you agreed to everything, now the other guy's got to kind of agree to a lot of stuff too. So, no, I didn't have any kind of a come home to Jesus chat with Tom Zenk. And he wasn't there long. And
you know, it's funny. He was in WCW for like 6 years. Like from 89 or 88 to 94, 95. He seemed to just be there for a while and just ever decreasing down the card.
When did he leave?
Probably 95 or something like that. I've talked about this with Shane Douglas, and it's one of those things where he said he seemed to have all the tools, good luck and that kind of thing, but just, I don't know if it was a personality issue or what.
No,
but
that's what it was. I'll tell you exactly what it is. He can't talk. He cannot talk. Now, you just said on our show, our regular show, Thunderbolt Patterson and Ole Anderson could talk you into a building. They could talk. Oh, if I could. Thunderbolt would talk you in. Ole would talk you in. Tom Zenk could talk you out because he can't. But what was the strange thing about Ole? Usually your good talkers are from down south. because they talk a lot of good bullshit. Ole was from Minneapolis, so you wouldn't expect him to talk a good game, but he talked a great game. So, and that's what I try to tell guys who want to start out in the wrestling business. I said, first of all, learn how to wrestle first. Do that, or at least learn the fundamentals. Then work on your character and your delivery. But then, even if you had a great interview, you have to sell yourself to whoever's in charge. You ever tell them you got to give them the idea for your gimmick if you got one, and you got to make the person feel that your character that you've decided on, you know, has merit, has worth. Then if you And you got to sell that to them. Now, if you're a young guy trying to sell a rapper gimmick to an old timer, yeah, I can see why it don't go. He don't see it. And actually I see it today, but I don't see it. If you think about Thunderbolt, if people wanted to do the rap, he'd just be more over even today if he could do it, but he didn't have to do it. But see, wrestling is more than just doing arm drags and drop kicks and all this kind of stuff and suplexes. It's more than that. It's the character that you portray. Take Tommy Rich. Decent worker, not great, decent. But he did that Southern Boys down south gimmick. And it was believable because it was true. And, you know, everywhere he'd went, because people thought he was really a good guy, and he is, and they identified with him. It's like anything else. Like Roddy Piper talked a hell of a game because you thought he was about half nuts. You thought he was crazy. And he sold a lot of tickets. So did Hulk Hogan. Sold a lot of tickets. Mm. Now, if you were saying in today's world, can you imagine some guys delivering interviews like they used to deliver? I don't see it. But I don't think anybody's actually tried it, tell you the truth. So who does that today?
Don't know one.
Even AEW doesn't do it. They just try to go out there and talk. And see, screaming doesn't get it. Nobody really does those interviews anymore anyway. But you got to be creative. And that's why I like the guy who you say, the rapper, who is he? What's his name?
Max Caster. Max,
you know, that's different. But he only does a short version, which is okay. But nobody else does it. You know, what you going to do when you get in wrestling? You got to find a gimmick or a character that nobody else is doing and go do it. Even if it's a copy of something 10 years ago, but nobody's doing it now, so who are they going to compare it to? Only your older fans. And those are the fans that are more likely to stay with you.
We shall...
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. We've probably got time for either two or three. Zwella, hey, Dutch and James, as always, love the podcast. I just watched an interview with Bobby Roode, and he credited Dutch with forming Beer Money. I had no idea Dutch created that. He said it was Jeff Jarrett also, but Dutch was very instrumental in forming Beer Money. So I mentioned this to you, or you mentioned this to me a few days ago. And you just said, I had no memory until I saw that bit of a clip, and then I went, oh, yeah, I did.
I'd actually forgotten it, really. Well, we were pushing Storm as a single. We're pushing Roode as a single. And they're both great workers, but... And Roode has trouble talking a little bit, getting himself over. And Storm can do a pretty good interview. But we were both trying to push him, and I was on creative, me and Vince Russo, Jeff Jarrett, and we would sit around and we would think and think and think. But you're pushing two single heels. you're trying to accomplish the same thing with both of them. So one day after my joint and my couple of lines of coke, I said, "Hey guys," and they went, "Yeah." Okay, take out the coke and take out the marijuana. I didn't really do that, but I was shooting heroin. But I said, "Why don't we do this? Why don't we take these guys and put them together as a tag team instead of trying to push each of them as separate entities, separate heels? Let's put them together." And they sit there and they said, "That's not a bad idea." So we did. And now we're just trying to go. We put them together as a tag team. I didn't give them the name. I think Storm came up with that, the beer money. And he came up with riding the little scooter down to the ring, which is made them different. But they had great matches and they got over. So sometimes when a booker has a problem, just back up on it. Sometimes the simplest route is the best route. And then at least get something started or get the people talking about this team and then go from there. See how the people respond to them. And they responded to them right away. So they did some really, really good stuff. They really did. And beer money. And I was hoping they would do good. I thought they would do well, but I don't know till you try them. So we tried them. They did well, and they were together, I don't know, for quite a while, I think.
Years, and I think. Yeah.
How long?
Years, I'd say, I think.
I'd say too. But they did good, and they got to work as a team. And you remember where I was most of the time when I was in TNA, right?
Catering.
So I didn't see a lot of what they did. I'd give them the finish and then I'd go to catering and said, I said, "I hope they can get it done."
Did you miss Chris Harris when he left? Because he left for WWE, ended up getting lumped with Braden Walker, and the worst promo. Just, you know, I think he just like kept doing promos. I interviewed him with the Braden Walker and was like, "Knock, knock, I'm going to knock you out," or something like that. It was atrocious. But he said, "We did 20 takes and that was one of them. I was just making stuff up at this point." And they used the worst thing that they possibly could. It basically got him under and he disappeared and returned to TNA. Okay. And never really worked out again.
He went to WWE directly from TNA?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Well, the reason being, that's why he did James a favor. I think if anybody was holding that team back, it would be that gentleman. What's his name again?
Chris Harris.
Chris Harris. Good guy. But remember in wrestling when they say, "Good guy, but here comes the knock." He didn't have any personality. He was a good worker, but there's a lot of good workers out there. You could take a first-year wrestling student that's learning the business. He could learn the moves. It just takes an athlete to do that. But for the interviews, for the pulling you in on the interviews, for hooking you with the interviews, you know, that wasn't Chris's strong point. So when Chris left, we were looking for something for James. Now it's coming back to me. And that's when we decided to put him, because James was used to a tag team. Mm-hmm. He wasn't really used to single work. So when we brought Bobby Roode in, they clicked. And James went up there and he kind of bombed out. Because this is what happened to, I don't know this for sure, but Jamie Noble told me they were doing a rehearsal one day. And Jamie Noble wanted to get in, he didn't know James. He wanted them to get in the ring and go through this.
Are we talking WWE here? Because it's Chris
Harris. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Chris Harris. Well, I've been hit on the head a couple of hundred thousand times. So, Chris Harris. But when they took him up there, they wanted him to go and rehearse a segment. Jamie Noble did. And he said, no, I don't rehearse. He said, what? I don't need to do that. Well, he flatly just, I heard, I'm not sure of this, but I heard he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And that was the end of him. So when he finished up about, I don't know, he wasn't there much longer. Or if he signed the contract, they pulled that back. I don't know what happened, but he didn't have their faith. Now, see, we were talking about, I was a yes man. If they'd have told me we need to rehearse, I'd say, okay, let's go. Don't argue with them and don't say, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that, because they're the bosses. They're the ones signing the checks. So go ahead and try to make everybody say, don't be slick oil on the floor. I mean, just go ahead and go along with it. And I think if you talk to a lot of old timers in a lot of businesses, they'd say that's the best way to do it. Don't disagree. Don't become a bigger cog in what they already are trying to loosen up. Just go ahead and try to contribute, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Don't say, no, I'm not doing that. And when he told Jamie said, okay, don't do it then. And then all he did is go back and he told Vince, he said he doesn't rehearse. And Vince says, oh, okay, that's all you got to do. That little bit right there can get you fired easily.
We'll ask either one or two. We'll see how much time we have. This is the one that I know you've got an answer for. Abe Achenbach, Kent, Ohio. Dutch was working the announcer's table for what many view as the worst wrestling event ever, Heroes of Wrestling. Not for your commentary, though. But I think he was involved with one that was infinitely worse. JCW Legends and Icons by Insane Clown Posse. Dutch wrestled a 2.5-minute six-man tag team match.
Oh, my God.
Which was actually one of the better matches that night, and I assume that was a decent payday, especially for only working less than 3 minutes. Almost all of the matches were a few minutes long, and the audience was booing or silent for the entire show. And most of the wrestlers were so far past their primes that they didn't absolutely belong in a ring. What were ICP thinking? The show was embarrassing on every level, and the Ken Patera versus Bob Backlund match was especially hard to watch, with Ken being 70 and barely being able to move. What do you remember of the show, and what are your thoughts on the entire debacle? All the best.
I wish I'd have had a camera, a video camera, because thinking back on it now is like a dream. It's like a
nightmare.
Well, not like a nightmare. It was just a bunch of weird segments, not only in the ring, but in the back. Just like a bunch of weird segments, like it's dark and they got a light on. We wrestled it at 8 o'clock, I think. And then we wrestled again. We did a late session and it come on at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So I wrestled the latest match I'd ever wrestled and the earliest match I'd ever wrestled at the same time. It was over about 4 o'clock in the morning. Those people were so ripped out of their minds watching it. And sometimes it'd be dark out there and they took a spotlight and they would just spotlight all over the crowd. It didn't make a damn bit of sense. So, but they were doing it. They were paying me. Remember, go along to get along. And I said, do it. I don't care. So we had a 6-man tag. And the guy called me up and warned me to do it, but he said, we'll pay you this. I said, well, hell, I won't come then. Why? I said, I'm not coming for that. He said, what would you come for?
Do you know who was in it? I've just found who was in it. And it was a 5-way match, apparently.
It was my little buddy, Black Brickhouse, Brickhouse Brown.
Blackhouse Brown. Austin Idol. So he won, unsurprisingly, because he don't do the job there, Derry. Doug Gilbert and you and Coco yep. Beware.
And I put it together. Because for me to get my money, the guy said, well, will you help me put it together in the back? I said, yeah, you give me my money, I will. It was just not a lot of hard work. So I'm thinking, okay, Austin Idol is here. Hey, Daddy. And then you had who? And yeah, Idol and Coco. I'm trying to think who my partners were.
No, this was a five-way. So no tagging.
No, we had six in it, didn't we?
No, it says five-way.
Well, okay. Okay, it was a five-way. That's how much I remember it. You know what I told them who to beat?
You.
Beat me, and I don't have no bitches and no griping. Why they beating me, man? We was up in the middle of goddamn nowhere. Up in Indiana or somewhere. The town had 300 people in it. We had with a bunch of juggalos out there that were stoned out of their minds. And all of a sudden they would look at the ring and they'd just see a bright light and they couldn't stand the bright ring lights, a light being that. Nobody was going to remember this. Or not. Just beat me, guys, and let's go. And let's do it in the quickest way possible. Let's get in the ring. Let's all start fighting. And the people didn't see much of me. We all disappeared into the crowd. Then we'd wait for the spotlight to come, see our next step. And then we'd go back. And then all of a sudden, I got in the ring and 1, 2, 3, ding, ding, ding. and then we left. I had Idol beat me, I think. So, and then we come back and that was it. That was the match. And need nothing to say, oh, let's go do it again, because it was the damnedest cluster I've ever seen in my life, really. But there was my money, okay, get in the car. Well, I actually rode up there. Guess what I rode up in there in? A limousine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a limousine. Somebody said, hey, I can get this limousine and we can pull up. I said, well, get it.
Kenny Bolin who rents it for you, was it?
It wasn't Kenny Bolin. It was some other guy that worked at a funeral home. It gets weird. And he had use of the limousine. So it was a...
Sure, it wasn't a hearse. Did it have like one great big seat?
It wasn't a hearse. It wasn't a hearse. It was the big limousine that the family rides in.
Oh.
It is not the hearse. But I rode in a hearse too. We'll tell this story another time. I rode in a hearse all the way to Memphis. But we'll tell that at another time.
I'm writing it down for next week.
But we all rode up. It was me and it was a friend of mine that I was training. He did a Bruiser Brody lookalike. Great guy. And he was a musician. And we had Doug Gilbert was in there, I think. And Brickhouse met us there. And Road Dog was there. I remember Road Dog was so effed up when he got there. I was trying to hide him out, go over there in the corner and sit down. And we got there kind of late because we're out in Indiana at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And we couldn't find how to get this place. We weren't on the earlier show. We was on the late show. So we pull up and how can you be, they had like 20,000 people there. How can you go and look for 20,000 people out in the woods and you can't find them? There was no lights. There were no nothing. It was Oak Grove or something. See, they didn't even have a police department. So you pull in and they got some cops there. What are you doing? Oh, we're performers. We're okay. Go ahead. And they didn't check you for drugs or anything. And I finally found out how they got the drugs in there. All the drugs were sold after you went in. And I'm thinking, well, how'd they get them in here? You know how they got them in there? They went like a week early and went in there and buried the drugs.
That's an old festival trick. Yeah.
And they put them in there. Nobody can catch them. I didn't learn it to that night. And then when they get there, they just dig the drugs up and start selling them. And the ones they don't sell, they put them back in the ground and cover them back up. So when they leave, you don't catch them or nothing. But they were catching people leaving with the drugs on them. I says, and they loaded the jail up that night, but all they were going to do was just fine them and let them go anyway. And so they made some money because they was mad at the festival anyway, because it was on a private farm and they didn't rent anybody that anybody can make any money on. So they were kind of pissed at the festival anyway, but it was crazy. So I wish I'd have had I think I wrote about it in one of my books. I forgot the name of the chapter, but it was wild.
But we haven't forgotten the name of the book.
I don't know. I got them right here, but I don't know.
The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road, available at Dirty Dutchman Tale with two L's.
But this is what happened to Road Dog. He was so messed up that he was late. And as soon as he got out of the car, they said, go, go, go. Your match is in the ring. It's a six-man tag or something, and do this and do this. And so he's messed up anyway. He goes to the ring. He's out there maybe 90 seconds, and they have it built up a little bit so the people could see. And it's a step off. You know, you got your ring, the ring that the actor sits on, and it's got a little apron with dirt in it. And then it's got a step off to the rest of the dirt floor. It's all dirt. He stepped off early and hit his knee on one of those 2x4s. And they had just took him out there. Somebody took him out there. Said, okay, there's the ring. Get in there. So he got in there and they started having it. And then he got hurt. I swear to God, about 90 seconds later, they're bringing him back. I know he'd cut his knee bad. So he pulled it down, and for the rest of the night, of course, we didn't have a doctor, no, none of that stuff that could help us in case we had a heart attack or something. There was no doctor back there, and somebody taped it up and new skinned it together. And when we got ready to leave, you know, he had his knee all taped up and it's still bleeding, and we went back. Oh, it was crazy.
I'm just looking at this, events, some of the matches. It opened with a 15-man battle royal that went nearly half an hour.
Yeah.
Right, so Brutus Beefcake, Carlito, Disco Inferno, Doink the Clown, Headbanger Mosh, Headbanger Thrasher, Jim Duggan, Jimmy Snuka, Rikishi, Rob Conway, Ronnie Garvin, Tony Atlas, Eugene, and Viscera. And the battle royal was won by Zach Gowan, both legs have to touch the floor, so maybe one on a technicality.
That sounds just like what they would do.
Following that, the Rock and Roll Express defeat the Midnight Express, Bobby Eaton and Dennis Condrey, in 33 seconds. So that must have been
that was a Dennis Condrey finish.
Yeah. Rhino and Two Cold Scorpio and Al Snow and Balls Mahoney and Raven and Sabu and Shane Douglas in a 7-way match. Rhino wins. And then there's the question asker.
Now, I think that was the early show.
Yeah, it's in the first half of this card. After that is the much vaunted singles match. Bob Backlund defeating Ken Patera in a, I don't know,
whatever.
Catastrophe, it sounds like. 5-way match that we've discussed with you in it. Singles match, Tracy Smothers defeats Tommy Rich in 36 seconds.
That's a Tommy finish.
Tag team match, guest referee Vampiro. Kevin Nash and X-Pac with Scott Hall defeat the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg. Who was this, the one where Road Dogg collapsed? Or was this another part?
I think that was the early show. We had a late show at 2 o'clock in the morning. I think they got some of that all messed up.
And apparently the main event, according to Cage Match, only Bob Orton and Roddy Piper defeat Mick Foley and Terry Funk in 4:14.
What town was that in?
This is, I'm in the field somewhere, I guess. Cave in Rock, Illinois.
Yep, that's it. But they had an 8 o'clock show, then they had a 2 o'clock show. I think a lot of those were mostly on the early show.
Ooh, do you want me to see if I can find the late show, or would that be?
I don't know, but even there,
nah, we'll leave it. We'll leave it anyway. And also,
but it had to be Road Dogg missed his first match because he was in the second match. Or they put him. I don't know what they did. It was. I'm not going to attest to any of that.
And just because we will end on this one. You were also at Juggalo's Flash Night Wrestling, Hanging with the Heroes, or Hanging with Heroes, the year before in Cave in Rock, Illinois, where you wrestled. Do you know who you wrestled in a singles match the year before?
No.
Doug Gilbert.
Oh, I remember that. But that wasn't a bad match.
I think.
But I was trying to think. They had one year, they had this girl singer. And she went out there.
I remember what her name was. Is it Tia Tequila or something like that?
Tia Tequila. So I'm watching her go out there, and she must be so stupid. She's kind of like slammed the Juggalos for being stupid. Well, they didn't like that. And they started telling her, you bitch, you this, that. And they started throwing stuff at her. And I forgot who she had out there with her. She had somebody with her that was trying to protect her. And they got to throwing bottles and everything, and the guy was knocking them down. And, you know, you got to go out there and watch. You're out in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere. So it was crazy. Then she said something, and then somebody in the crowd, they started shouting, show your tits, show your tits. And then the crowd picked it up, show your tits. And the bottles were coming. She said, okay, wait a minute. And then she poured her top up, and the people went, oh, we hate your tits. We hate your tits. So no matter what you did. And she finally got hit with something. And even one of the clown posses went out there, the bigger one, and called her up and said, hey, listen, just go in the back. We'll still pay you. Oh, no. I'll do my set. And that's when she got hit. And I think it cut her head or something. Whatever. And then they pulled her off. It was the damn. See, what they would do, they would go out and they would rent this farmland and they'd get it dirt cheap. Then they would go in there and set it up. And what did they call this? The Jubilato. What was the name of it?
If the pay-per-view was Legends and Icons, it was Juggalos Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, and that's the
Gathering of the Juggalos.
Oh, the Gathering. And that was the damnedest thing. Like I said, I wish I had a camera. And they probably had a camera. Because this would sell. I mean, it's the craziest shit. I think some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen around a wrestling match.
Do you think... Oh, good, the entire video's out on YouTube. So it's JCW Presents Legends and Icons Gathering of the Juggalos. So someone needs to hunt that out and watch it.
What year was it?
I don't know what this video was, but the year you had your five-way, it was 2011. Very, very quickly, because we're sort of going over time on this as well. Wrestling quality-wise, what was worse, Heroes of Wrestling or the Juggalo Gathering?
Oh,
one?
The Juggalos.
Worst wrestling event ever? Quality wise,
I think so. And then the other one is not far behind.
Right.
You know, I've been on some stinkers, believe me. But what was wrong with the Juggalos thing is nobody give a crap. They just did it because they don't take wrestling seriously. They take wrestling for if you want to go out there and do a good job, you can do it. If you don't, then nobody cares. Would you care if you had to appear in front of a bunch of drunk-ass, paint-the-faces-painted people sitting out there?
I would care.
They're looking at you. They're looking at with eyes like this, and half of them asleep, half of them awake, some of them passed out.
I'd care very much about my safety. Yeah.
Well, we didn't. There's a bunch of damn juggalos. So, I mean, they're basically harmless, except when we pulled in, we was in that limousine, so it was hard to turn around and maneuver. But somebody said, hey, they just had a knifing up here. Some guy robbed another guy. And I went, what the hell are we in? But that's the only thing I heard that was kind of bad. And then when we left, you know, the cops were really friendly. It's not, but the cops can't even come on the premises unless they're invited. And nobody invited them. That's why they could openly sell drugs. I went by a table one time. It had just a bunch of drugs. I still got a picture of it. You just got drugs like marijuana just laid out on the table and the prices, because the cops can't even go on the property unless they're called on the property. And they got a guy got cut, but still they didn't call anybody on the property, because once they're on. So they said, keep them off. They don't like cops anyway. So, but to me, if I was messed up there and I go there and I see all those people, I'd have freaked out, tell you the truth. They look like, some of them look like they hadn't taken a bath. They go and they spend the whole week there. Some of them look like they hadn't taken a bath in like a week, and maybe not. But, you know, this is the first time I've talked about this event in ages. And it brings back not bad memories, but it's just memories that I don't know how I forgot. I mean, I don't know why I don't think about this every day, but the two posse guys, good guys, because I remember them being in Smoky Mountain.
What?
I think they were in Smoky Mountain. They love wrestling, and I know they's in WWL for WWE, right?
Unbelievably, they were in. I think they made appearances in WWF, WCW, ECW, and TNA. They managed to make appearances in all of them.
It was TNA, yeah. Yes. Because they love wrestling, and this guy who put it together, he just booked a bunch of people. Because they must have more money than they have brains, but they may have sold so many tickets to this gathering that, hey, this is just a... it's another show for them. Some of those artists, because they could ask for 10 grand, and I guess they got it. So I don't know what Backlund asked for. I bet Backlund asked for 5 grand. And they could have said, because they're big fans, and they said, okay, come on. Well, I'd come on too. I didn't make anywhere near 5 grand, but I made a damn good payday that I didn't think that, I got to ride 2 hours to get there. Okay, I can do that.
Four figures? Are we talking four figures?
Oh, no, we're not talking four. Well, let me see. Yeah, we are talking four figures.
There you go.
Yes, we are. But nothing like drop down to the early four figures, and you'll have my salary.
Hey, still for an experience in 4-hour trip.
No, yeah, but seriously, though, you go there. You're doing something you know how to do. You know you're not going to get hurt. You're just going to, I mean, I'm not going to drive a truck, make this. I'm not going to do anything else and do this. So, and they're paying entertainers, so pay me. And they did. And had, guess what? And you got ready, your money was right there. Droop, here you go. Just in packets. Here you go. Is it okay? Okay, okay. So, yeah, bye. And they didn't have you. Now, if you want to hear a bunch of bitching, have them go and stiff some of those guys. You never hear the end of it. And I don't blame him. If a guy tells you he's going to give you X number of dollars, he needs to give you X number of dollars. Because, you know, if somebody had really gotten hurt in that ring that night, they had no medical personnel around. And I would think there had to be some on the premises somewhere, because you can't have a big festival like that with not having medical personnel there. They just weren't back there with us. So, but I felt sorry for Road Dogg, cut his knee. And but on the way back, he wasn't feeling any pain anyway. So we got him back and we all went home. I got home about 7 o'clock in the morning.
A little bit richer.
A little bit, yeah. But I enjoyed, I wrote a chapter about it in my book, and I got to see it firsthand.
There we go. And you can get a signed copy of those books, The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road from Dirty Dutch Mantel, with 2 L's at gmail.com. Make your request there, as well as diplomas, as well as potentially signed hats, if you make a request, as well as signed trading cards at some point soon. So register your interest, Dirty Dutch Mantel with 2 L's at gmail.com. And if you want to put a question in for this show, for Ask Dutch Anything, every single Tuesday, it is questionsfordutch@gmail.com. But for now, Dutch, I'm very hungry. I'm going to have some dinner.
You're always hungry about this time.
Well, yeah, it's 7:30.
What time is it?
It's 7:30. I'm starving now.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What time's it here? Oh,
half
okay.
2. So you need to have your lunch. I need to have my dinner. And Dutch, we need to say we the people.
We the people. I enjoyed the show.